on the line now I have Social Democrats TD Cian O'Callaghan. Good afternoon, Cian.
Good afternoon, how are you?
And thanks very much for taking the call. This is an unusual one. Estate agents are looking for personal information, financial information from people who just want to view houses. What's the story there, Cian?
Yeah, and just to say, it's not estate agents in general. This is just happening in a couple of instances anyway that I know of, and I've been contacted by constituents, you know, who are potential first-time buyers who are very kind of concerned about this. So what's been happening is they've been registering interest to view homes. We're talking about new build homes here, where there'd be, you know, a whole scheme, and then the estate agent has come back to them saying, look, in order for us to arrange your viewing, you need to provide full proof of funds, and then they specify that they need to provide proof of a mortgage approval in principle, evidence of a Help to Buy grant if they're using that, evidence of all savings that they might use in the purchase, evidence of any gifts from family members, and if there's going to be any kind of cash involvement, that needs bank statement or letter from solicitor. And then they go on, more troublingly, to specify that if you're giving the, you know, that they won't take preliminary approval for a mortgage, that they won't accept that, has to be full mortgage approval, and that you can't, if you're providing the evidence of that to them, this is just to get a viewing of a home, you have to give the actual loan amount that you've been approved for, that has to be visible, you can't redact it or black it out. And that sparks a particular concern. You know, a number of people contacted me and said, look, then the estate agent is going to know the maximum of what we could spend on this home, what our limit is. So they're saying, look, it potentially puts them at a disadvantage individually. And then they're also saying, look, the estate agent is going to be gathering this information from hundreds and hundreds of people. And from that, they could, if they wanted to, they could produce a kind of, you know, a database to see what's the maximum that we could charge for these new homes or for a second phase of these homes. So it's giving them kind of invaluable information and data. And the whole principle around data protection is that you should never request more information than you actually need, it's actually necessary for the purpose of what someone's going to do. So for someone to view a home, kind of information that, you know, would be reasonable to ask about would be, you know, name, contact details, those sorts of things. But this is very kind of detailed, very intrusive. This isn't, you know, people going to the purchase stage or negotiating contracts or anything like that. This is a very preliminary viewing. And, you know, estate agents really should be looking to get the maximum amount of people in to view homes, the maximum amount of potential buyers, get as much interest as they can in homes, rather than a process like this. So raises a lot of concerns. And the I think it's worth saying that the Data Protection Commission has previously given advice in terms of estate agents when they're organising viewings for, you know, for lettings and renting a home. And they've said that looking for this type of information, bank statements and so forth, isn't consistent with data protection law. That would be contrary to data protection law. So if that's the case for viewings for renting, you know, it's probably the case that's, you know, the same for viewings for a purchase. I have written to the Data Protection Commissioner about it. I think the estate agents doing this should be contacting the Data Protection Commissioner themselves, seeing if they're data protection compliant. And I've also raised this with the Property Regulatory Services Authority and also with the Minister for Housing. So, I mean, just a final point just to make an issue to you is that the people, as you know, when they're looking to buy a home, a lot of people are under a lot of pressure, a lot of stress, a lot of anxiety. They've sometimes spent years trying to get savings together for a deposit, years trying to get mortgage approval. And then they're in this kind of competitive environment as well with everybody else. So to have this added in on top of them when they're already, unfortunately, an awful lot of them really stressed out and have been, you know, outbid on other homes and have been going through this process, it's really not something that they welcome or want, and it kind of creates a situation as well where they feel, well, you know, some people may agree to all these data requests and then they'll be able to view the home, and if I don't agree and I feel it's wrong and I shouldn't be asked to provide all this, then I'm locked out of even being able to view the home.
Yeah, no, that's terrible. It's putting more pressure on people that are already under pressure, as you said, Cian, and something has to be done about this, I'd imagine, rapidly.
Yeah. So I'm hoping between the Data Protection Commissioner, Minister for Housing, and the Property Services Regulatory Authority, who, you know, will regulate estate agents, and stuff between them, that they can put a stop to this quickly. Just, you know, and it is worth saying, you know, most estate agents aren't doing this at all. It's just, as far as I know, a small number that have been doing it. But we don't want to become this kind of established precedent in the sector. And we certainly don't, you know, maybe the estate agents aren't using this data for any of those purposes. But the fact that people are questioning whether they are, and they're worrying about whether they are, really kind of highlights that you shouldn't be collecting this sort of data that could be used for those purposes. And that goes for any collection data. You should not be collecting data that you could then go on to use for another purpose. That just creates, you know, anxiety for people. And, you know, they show that, yes, they're working on behalf of the, you know, who they're trying to sell for, but they should just be bearing in mind the pressures that buyers are under as well, and not kind of adding to those pressures and those stresses.
Yeah, and this is just people who are just viewing homes. Did this type of information be required when they've actually agreed to buy a home? I don't think that much information is required.
Yeah, and certainly when you're moving to buy, you know, more information would be required, and certainly, you know, mortgage approval, you know, those sorts of things. But whether or not the full amount of your mortgage approval when you're going to buy, why that would be necessary, I don't see why it would, and why they should even at that point be seeking to gather that. So it should be perfectly legitimate to redact that information at any stage of the process, including at the concluding parts. Because it's really only your business what you are able to get mortgage approval for. It's not actually their business. You know, and that's kind of the key point in this. In any event, you know, most people, when they're going to buy a home, they're going to be buying in and around, you know, they're going to be looking at homes in and around the range of what they've been approved for. Mortgages isn't necessarily going to be hugely far off. You know, you're not going to get a situation where people who have mortgage approval for €250,000 are going viewing €450,000 homes and then going through all the heartache of seeing a home they like and not having the mortgage approval first and wasting the estate agent's time. I mean, that sort of practice, you know, would be extremely rare. I mean, why would people want to put themselves through that hassle? But it's also, you know, you can't request data just because it makes your life a little bit more convenient or, it, you know, it reduces the amount of people looking for a view. And that's not an appropriate rationale for requesting data. Like, it has to be, you have to have a genuine reason for that data to enable the activity that you're trying to organise. That goes for anything in life, you know. You can't, someone who's providing a health service, they can't start asking you all questions about your financial details. They can ask you relevant healthcare questions relevant to the service they're providing, you know, but they can't be asking about something not relevant. Really, if you're organising a viewing, name, contact details, when are you available for the viewing, is the kind of stuff you should ask.
Yeah, exactly,
And not a lot beyond that, you know.
Yeah, no, it is, Matt. And the people that contacted you, Cian, are they worried, are they stressed, or are both?
Yeah, both. And you know, some of them have gone through bidding for homes and been outbid and have, you know, been looking for homes for the last, you know, year or two, and like that, you know, they actually, you know, it's not like they're viewing homes because they've nothing better to be doing at the weekend or in the evening or something like that. They're people who really actually want this process to come to an end and be able to bid on something and buy it and conclude and get a home, and are stressed out renting and paying high rents and all of that. Like they're not doing this because they're not wasting estate agents' time or anything like that, or doing it for the crack. It's the exact opposite. They're deadly serious about buying. They're absolutely looking in areas that they think they hope will fit with what they can afford, and all of that, you know. So that's the point. Like, they're quite, you know, unfortunately, quite exasperated at this point, you know, and they couldn't be more serious about wanting to buy. And they couldn't be more prepared in terms of getting their mortgage approval and finances and savings and everything else in place. So there's probably an element to that as well, that, you know, being put through an additional hurdle, having gone through all of those hurdles, gotten everything in order, it, you know, it's quite frustrating from their point of view. And it is just to, you know, they do have to view a few different places. They do, you know, in terms of, you know, making a choice and seeing what they, you know, what will work for them and their family, you know.
Yeah. And it must be in breach of data protection laws by the sounds of things. So is it down to the data commissioner now to move on this?
Yeah, no, I mean, the data commissioner can move on it, the Minister for Housing can move on it, the Property Services Regulatory Services Authority, all of them can move on it. I mean, really, these estate agents themselves now should move on this and realise, look, what they're doing, you know, isn't right. It's not it's not a good practice. It's not necessary. They don't seem to, from any of their statements so far, seem to have referenced any kind of engagement with the Data Protection Commission themselves, which really should have been their first step in terms of if they thought that this was an appropriate level of data to be looking for. So really, I think that they themselves should stop this practice now, and just remove this as kind of an additional worry and stress. And then, you know, look, there's plenty of other things for everyone else to be, you know, concerned about in terms of housing, and there's lots of other issues. So, you know, in a lot of ways, our focus shouldn't even be beyond this. So I think the responsible thing for them to do at this point would just be to remove these requests.
Yeah, and hopefully now there will be something done fairly rapidly about it. Now, you mentioned the housing minister there, and so I'm going to move away for, if you don't mind.
Yep.
And I usually talk to local councillors about housing developments in our area. And the last time I was talking, I think it was to Alison Gilliland, and we were talking about the Oscar Traynor Road, which had been agreed by Dublin City Council and was all ready to go, but the Minister for Housing hadn't signed off on it, so it was at a standstill. Is there any movement there, Cian, do you know?
You know, and we were actually raising this in the Housing Committee yesterday. We were discussing amendments to the Land Development Agency Bill, and we were actually raising this with the Minister yesterday, and specifically mentioned the Oscar Traynor Road site, and we didn't hear anything back from him on that, and it is very frustrating. The councillors and Dublin City Council have all worked together, and the majority of them have agreed a way forward on that site that will see a mixture of affordable cost rental social homes, including, you know, affordable purchase, and that has a majority, you know, agreement on that. And really, we do need to see that moving forward. And it's not acceptable that the Minister of Department of Housing to date aren't engaging with that, aren't commenting on it, aren't giving approval for it. We need to get on with it. And a lot of public lands held by local authorities, the pattern that we see that the Department of Housing don't give the green light for schemes that councillors and councils are trying to move forward. And this is one of the things that's causing a logjam in delivering homes that are affordable for people to buy or rent and social homes. And there was a really damning report from the SRI out a couple of weeks ago, really being very critical of the approach that we're taking on housing, and saying, look, we can borrow at the lowest interest rates that we ever have been able to. It was saying our growth rates are higher than that. So if you borrow a few billions because the economy is growing, our ability to pay them back is going to be there. There's no issue. And we're saying we should be at least doubling what we're borrowing in terms of housing so we can build affordable homes and social homes. And it was saying that to do that would be very, you know, fiscally responsible, and especially because one of the biggest challenges to our economy and our competitiveness is our housing costs and our renting costs. So we're saying, look, this is actually the responsible thing to do. It'll be much more responsible than putting more and more money into housing supports like HAP and rent loans, and instead it'd be much better to put that into building homes. So, you know, I really think that the Minister and Department of Housing need to get on with this and stop delaying it.
Yeah, and it's there seems to be always problems regarding housing in this country for some reason, in our area in particular. Like the Chiver site, for instance, that was to go ahead, and now nothing's happening whatsoever. And the one down on the Beaumont Road where the old fruit and veg shop was, that there's scandal about that, about the height of the thing, that
Yeah, and I think we had a good planning process to a degree for a certain number of years, where the heights and that were set out in the development plan, so it gave a certain amount of certainty. So when someone's putting in a planning application, they would kind of know, well, you know, on that area. I can put in up to 4 stories or 5 stories or whatever, and then that's going to get, that will get planning permission. There won't be an issue around it. So it gave kind of certainty and gave kind of rules or parameters around planning. And effectively now that kind of certainty around planning is gone, and developers and people looking to develop sites actually don't know, because the development plan standards are being superimposed and all this. So there is now effectively no certainty over what sort of heights are going to be achieved on any particular site. So this means that you can have these endless planning applications going on where a developer is seeing, well, I got permission for 4 stories previously. If I go in for 6 now, will I get that? And then if they did get 6, they kind of go, oh, can I get 7? Can I get... So you can have these, for years, developers trying to see, can I get more and more homes onto this piece of land? And each time they achieve in the planning permission maybe a greater density or more heights, the value of the land goes up. Sometimes then they sell the land because they've increased the value of the latest planning permission. A new owner buys it. They go through the same process, try and see, can they get more onto the land? And they sometimes flip it. So you've got this kind of endless, in some cases, endless speculation going on, land values increasing, but homes not getting built. And there's been research done on the strategic housing developments and it's shown that only about 30% of those are either have been built or are getting built at the moment. 70% of them are lying idle. So that whole uncertainty, that whole kind of speculation, you know, I think is actually leading to a bit of a bottleneck on the planning side. It's much better to have very clear parameters, standards set out in the development plan that everybody adheres to. People know what it is, and then you get on with building rather than just circumventing the development plans and this kind of endless speculation. And I have to say, I think that the model that we have here really is a flawed model. What we do in a lot of other European countries is state or the local authority buys up, you know, agricultural land, builds up land banks, decides we're going to have this amount of social homes, this amount of affordable purchase, this amount of homes for senior citizens, these amounts of different sizes, these will be kind of family-sized homes, we'll have this amount of apartments, we'll have, and they put in the infrastructure, you know, the roads, the cycleways, the schools, the playgrounds, the community centres, they put all of that in, and then they don't necessarily build it out directly themselves, but they contract out the building of it, you know, to smaller builders or the local authorities do it or whatever, and the housing is built out with the infrastructure and the amenities and the transport, you know, as the demand, to meet demand. We've kind of got a, you know, total opposite situation where most of the development land is in the hands of a small number of people, and it tends to be actually the larger developers. And this is an issue as well, that smaller builders often can't get their hands on development land, which means they can't get in and kind of compete with the larger developers. And if they could compete, it can help drive costs down. And then you end up with a, you know, particularly in different areas, you can have one or two developers owning all the development land, and then they decide to build it out slowly because if they want to achieve the kind of maximum price that they're looking for, it makes sense to build out schemes over 5, 10, even 15 years rather than having them, you know, and you could easily build out, if you get the infrastructure in place and the facilities in place, you could easily build out large enough housing schemes, 1,000, 2,000 homes, you know, in a year or two. That's all doable. But larger developers generally won't do that. They want to do it slow and piecemeal so they can achieve the maximum prices. So our whole lack of management on land, allowing it in the hands of a small number of people that, you know, want to maximise their returns, isn't serving us well at all. And that kind of lack of planning certainty that's been uprooted in the last number of years, I think that's slowing down provision of housing as well. So if we could fix that, and if we could move the model of putting your infrastructure in before or with homes and planning that out properly and ensuring a kind of quick delivery when housing and infrastructure and facilities are needed, that would be the way to do it. And often what we see now with large housing schemes, and you see this very much when you're public representative, and people in community see it as well, is they can spend 10, 20, 30 years fighting and campaigning to get basic infrastructure and amenities in place that should have been provided with the housing in the first place. And, you know, it can take a huge amount of energy and effort in the community as well that really could be better spent, you know, organising activities or whatever. But then they have to spend years just trying to get the basics in place so they can go on to do that kind of wider community work and events.
Yeah, and I'm sure you've come across it, Cian. People are out there are very, very annoyed, and a lot of people are saying that the government are pandering to developers. And I know I've interviewed residents' associations, and as I said, local councillors, and in particular the Oscar Traynor site there. I've been talking about that must be for 8 years now.
Yeah,
it's crazy.
Yeah, it is, and like a lot of what's happened is, like, as we know, every single apartment that's built in Dublin at the moment is bought up by an investment fund, so people can't even purchase it. And then those investment funds set, you know, very high rent levels that are out of reach for a lot of people. Some of the investment funds rather keep the apartments empty rather than, you know, lower their rents. So all of that is pushing up prices and kind of locking people out. And it used to be the case, not that long ago, that apartments were more affordable than houses, and they were an option for, you know, people who, you know, might be retired if they wanted to move out of the family home, or for people starting off, or for single people as well, who, you know, wouldn't have the need for a larger house and wouldn't maybe be able to, you know, afford to buy it. And that's been taken away now as a, you know, that isn't an option, a purchase option for people. And then that creates, you know, in terms of family homes as well, look, some people, as they get older, will want to stay in their family home, and 100% they, you know, that should be respected and supported. But some will want to move to something smaller, which then frees up a family home for someone else. But they'll only want to do that if they'll only want to sell their family home if they can buy into, you know, an apartment or whatever, rather than they don't want to be paying a high rent and then not knowing what's going to happen. You know, am I going to be able to afford that into the future? They want the security if, you know, if they're moving from home ownership to another form of home ownership. So not having those options for people, all those things are creating knock-on problems and effects. And I think that very much is the case, that it's a lot of housing policy in Ireland seems to be written, and it's not just me saying this, it's the lobbying register shows this, that it seems to be written by the, you know, developers and property industry. And you can see that in the lobbying industry, on the lobbying register. And actually, there was a really good piece of research done by an academic in Queen's University and University College Dublin as well. It's called De-Democratising the Irish Planning System. And in that, they interview people who lobbied for the property industry, and they talk about how, you know, they're boasting about getting their policies implemented lock, stock and barrel by the government. And they're the policies of reducing standards. And it's worth saying as well, making this point, that you know, pretty much every year that industry comes to the government and say, if you reduce standards in apartments and make things easier for us and let us have, you know, higher densities and higher densities and all that sort of stuff, then apartment building will become affordable and it will become viable. And each year they keep on coming in, having gotten a whole lot of changes the year before, each year they keep on coming in looking for more, and they keep getting more. And they're not delivering on their promises of affordable apartments that people can purchase. The opposite is happening.
Okay, Cian, unfortunately we've run out of time. I'd say we could probably talk for another half hour about what's going on out there. Is there anything you'd like to add before we go?
No, listen, that's great. And thanks very much for having me on and for having the discussion. Appreciate it.
Yeah, no, thank you very much. And hopefully we'll talk again, and hopefully we'll see some movement on the whole housing problem.
Exactly, yeah, that's what we're all looking for.
Okay, listen, thank you very much, Cian. Thank you.
Thanks, bye.